Welcome to Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. We are a story about Sheriff Keller, a man who is bringing justice to a small town.
We're a podcast about a story of Sheriff Keller.
Yes, yes. I butchered the intro that I was doing as a joke.
And I don't really know why Archie Digest is the title of a podcast about Sheriff Keller, but we'll just go. Maybe Keller's first name is Archie.
Yeah, I don't know if we know what his first name is, actually. But, so we're here tonight. We're going to talk about episode 10, which is called Chapter 10, The Lost Weekend. I'm Russ Burlingame from comicbook.com. With me tonight, I have my old buddy Craig and a special guest. So, folks, introduce yourselves. Let's start with Michelle.
Hello, I'm Michelle. I'm a big fan of Riverdale and the podcast.
And where can people find you on Twitter?
At MimiC1019.
There we go. And for the longest time, I was referring to you as Mimi when you're actually Michelle. I'm lame. I'm Craig, not lame. My name is actually Craig from KSiteTV.com. And we're here to talk about episode 10 of Riverdale. You'll notice there's somebody missing this week. And it's not just Josie.
Although we did get questions about that.
Yes. So who's not here?
Yeah, our good friend Chris Hayner is not here this week. He is in Europe, as he said last week. He was going to actually record an introduction to the podcast for us, but he forgot completely about that. He is, however, going to record his thoughts on this episode so that tonight we are broadcasting live. More likely than not, after the episode's done, I will go back to work. And then tomorrow morning, I will try to paste everything together and we'll have one full episode that'll be the three of us and also a little postscript from Chris.
Does this mean people are listening to us right now?
Let me see, because I was actually... We have one viewer right now.
Hello, one viewer. It must be...
Is it Betty and Juggy?
No, if it's Betty and Juggy, you're awesome, just so you know.
Either that or it's Andy, because Andy has been, he asked me a couple of times and then he subscribed to the ECV channel.
Okay. Well, hello to whoever's listening, Andy, Betty and Juggy.
And I'm about to tweet it, which is why I'm about to tweet the link to this, which is why I moved the microphone, because when I actually click on things during the, with the microphone sitting there, it tends to click, 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 and that drives the people who listen to the podcast crazy. So why don't we actually, while I'm tweeting this out, why don't we start with Michelle, what did you think of tonight's episode? You know the format of our show. You can pretty much just jump right in.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a really great episode. I feel like each one gets better, but this was fun. I thought it was the most high school episode. You know, a lot of high school-y things went on, the cheerleading and the party. It was great. I thought it was great. Britt and Brian did a good job with it.
Yeah, what I found interesting too, I realized when Cheryl and Chuck crashed, basically it's like if you combined the TV versions of Cheryl and Chuck, you would get comic book Reggie. Because Reggie would totally be the one to crash and ruin a party in the comic books.
I really miss Reggie.
Well, there are 13 reasons why he's not in too much this year, but hopefully he'll be on more next season. And Russ looks like he's about to say something, or maybe he's still tweeting something out.
I had to go download the cover image to the podcast because you see a little peek behind the scenes is that I'm the one who do the audio editing, but the snazzy like images that are attached to our Podbean and things like that is all Craig. So whenever I need to actually post anything about the podcast, I usually have to go back into an old Facebook message that Craig sent me and pull up and then download and then re-upload a document.
Nice. Yeah, I have fun doing those covers. I've actually already done the one for episode 11.
Yep.
And spoiler warning, it's going to use the To Riverdale and Back Again logo from the comic book again.
Nice.
Since we already did a To Riverdale and Back Again episode, we're doing it twice this year.
Yeah, and I couldn't have seen that coming, honestly. I mean, actually, I said in the last episode that I was skeptical of it because it was not the same kind of quote-unquote movie that everything else had been.
Well, it was interesting because after the screening on earlier this week, whenever it was, I think it was Monday, Roberto Aguirre Sequeira was talking about how at one point they had thought about, you know, doing the show on the Warner Brothers backlot, which of course is where the TV movie was done. And so, but, you know, ultimately they realized Vancouver was perfect for the show. And I do agree. I mean, the settings, the buildings, I mean, everything. I think it's better in Vancouver rather than looking like Stars Hollow.
Yeah, well, and
so I'm totally cool with
that. Honestly, I think that if you shoot something in LA, it would be really hard to achieve the kind of mood that this show does. Like, it's very atmospheric and the colors and the everything else. I feel like shooting in LA, everything would be a little bit more kind of bright and washed out. And if you wanted to get a mood or a look like this, you would have to artificially create it, and it would be a little bit more artificial.
Yeah, I'm amazed they had snow as long as they did. We've seen snow for, like, multiple episodes in a row, and there was still snow on the ground when they were filming the finale.
But that's this year was kind of a weird year. That might have just been dumb luck.
Yeah, probably. But, yeah, so this episode... there were some challenges for Bughead.
Aw, Bughead.
Archie didn't want his parents to finalize the divorce, and Veronica, like, has a little challenge from her father a little bit.
Yeah, I think that the ideas that we've had, basically on and off since the very beginning, that Hiram Lodge is going to have been involved in some way, shape, or form with the killing, is pretty much the show is steering in that direction more and more. Whether it's actually going to turn out to be true or not, I think at this point we're supposed to pretty much assume that that's probably the case, because he's very much like Hal Cooper. He's on a fast, like a bullet train to being a jackass.
But do we believe that Hermione could be the evil one?
Well, I talked about that once before, but I used the Arrested Development metaphor of... Lucille Bluth, who kind of pulled the strings the whole time, and her husband was the fall guy, and eventually you found out in the finale or whatever it was. I'm super skeptical about that at this point with Hermione, although the unequivocal yes, she's a saint from Smithers does one of two things for me. It either says, like, that makes her a lot more suspicious because, you know, he had that moment of honesty that gave way very quickly to, nope, she's perfect. Nothing's wrong here. Or the other side of that is the thing that a lot of people intuited in, I want to say, the pilot or the second episode, which is that Smithers could have feelings for Hermione.
Smithers is Sean Spicer.
I think she, I mean, kind of like all the adults, you know, lays in that gray area, like most human beings do. I mean, nobody's like completely good or completely evil. So I think she, you know, she does what she has to do for her family and justifies it in her own way.
Yeah, and I think we see a broad spectrum of that same kind of sentiment coming from the parents, because, you know, you have, like, Fred Andrews, who's, you know, the only thing we know that he's done that's really shady was in the past kind of bumping FP out of the way so that the business could stay afloat.
Right.
Whereas with FP and with the Coopers and everybody else, it's all very, very, it's happening right now, A, and it's all very kind of obviously sketchy.
Right.
That actually kind of plays into a weird kind of, just to take a quick detour, a theory that I got when I rewatched last week's episode. You talked a lot, Craig, about the idea that we saw a little bit of crazy Cheryl when she was blacking out the photos. I was thinking maybe it's not necessarily crazy. Maybe more than anything else, it's that following, you know, the perceived betrayal by Archie, she is recoiling and basically lashing out against anybody who's not family. Because one of the things that you'll note is that she didn't actually cross Polly off until Polly came into the room. And it kind of felt to me like she comes in, she makes herself known, and then, you know, Cheryl puts a second of thought into it and says, like, oh, screw her, she's not really family either.
And that's kind of like how Tina and Ginger ticked her off this week.
Yeah, I think one of the more interesting things going into the like final moments of the show, because it's weird to me how like to think about how little show we actually have left this season.
Oh, so sad.
I know.
I only have two episodes left.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
But I think one of the things that's interesting as we're doing that is that we're getting to a point where Cheryl seemingly has just nothing and nobody. Like, she already wasn't beloved, but now we're getting the, like, the people that she has trusted or that she has liked or that she has surrounded herself with, she's pushing them all away.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's because of the fact that she doesn't trust anybody, or if it's just, I think that it's a coping mechanism on some level.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what it is that she's coping with, if the kind of gravity of Jason's death is finally just now really settling into her brain, or if there's something else going on that we don't know about yet.
Well, it's like she could rely on Jason when she couldn't rely on anyone right. else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there was the whole birthday party story from episode yeah. five or so.
Right, like I think and Jason always kind of like shielded her from a lot of that,
yeah.
and now she's got to just kind of internalize it. Whereas before she had him, and now he's just not there, so it's like everything at once.
Yeah, the synopses, the official like write up for 12 came out tonight, and I do think that we're gonna find out. I think that the missing pieces to the Blossom family puzzle are gonna come into relief in 12. I can't remember exactly what the synopsis said, but whatever it said meshed with something that Madeleine said to Craig and I that we still can't talk about publicly because Madeleine apparently thought that having seen it through episode 6 meant that we had seen pretty much the whole season.
That was like when she referred to the babies to us.
Exactly. She said the babies. She said another thing, which, it.
And then she said that whole bit about, you know, Sheriff Keller killing Jason.
That's true.
Which well, I should correct is not actually what she said in case it does turn out to be him. No, Madeleine didn't tell us.
No. Although that, like that little room, I'm going to, for the finale, I think I'm going to put together a supercut of all of the things where people told us things that make deducing the identity a little bit easier. Because there's a lot of things. It's funny. We talked last week about how the folks on Reddit had thought that we spoiled a lot because we knew more. You know, because we typically know a little bit more than most people because we've talked to these folks and everything like that. And even conceding the point that we spoil some stuff sometimes, there are some things we've been holding on to for many many weeks now that. And it's nothing really huge and ground shattering. It's basically more stuff like the babies line.
Right.
But I need to put together like a supercut of a couple of these things that we're not allowed to say so that I can just plunk it into the podcast when it's finally there.
As long as it doesn't make the actors look bad.
No. No, I'm talking about like many of the answers that were given to the one question you asked everybody, because I can say what the question was. Craig and I were on the same. You know, there were basically two groups that were doing all the interviews at the last set visit we did for the finale, and Craig and I were in the same group. And every single person who came over because they were shooting the finale, Craig asked, "What was your reaction to reading the script and finding out who killed Jason Blossom?" And the reactions that we got from the actors ran the gamut from people who just said kind of neat things about like their emotional state or their surprise or like blah, blah, blah. You know, apparently they did a live or they did a table read so that everybody learned more or less at the same time.
Here's the question, though.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't really ruining anything because we don't know for sure.
Right.
But didn't Ashley say she's not in the episode where it's revealed?
I don't remember. You said that last week, too, and I don't remember her saying that, but I could be wrong.
But I'm wondering if maybe it's revealed at the end of 12.
Well,
and that's why she wasn't there.
The way that they explained it... No, because you also said, or either you or Chris said last week, that the Pussycats have a big performance in 12.
Oh, so I would think they would be in 13 because
they definitely were in 13 because there was okay. an Instagram story where Ashley had posted something along the lines of that she thought she had the day off, and then they called her in at 5:30 in the morning.
Okay.
So they definitely were in 13. I don't know if that means they're in 11, 12, and 13. We actually have one of our listeners who had asked us when we put out the bat signal for questions. Someone asked us, the very first response we got, like moments later, was, where's Josie?
You know, I asked that question right after we watched... I asked that question right after we watched episode 11. I asked Albert from CBR. And then episode 12 starts, and Josie shows up within the first minute and a half.
You mean 10 and 11.
Isn't that what I said?
You said 11 and 12. Anyway.
Yeah, 10 and 11. I can't count. I'm a writer.
But KJ Winkster 55 on Twitter had asked us where Josie is. I told him with a big smiley that she was in 11 and 12. And then he asked about 13, and I hadn't answered him yet because A, I don't actually know, although I'm pretty confident that yes, she's in 13. But B, we started recording, so that's why I didn't respond yet. I'm sorry.
He's actually chilling to be a queen.
I wonder now. What the reason is that she hasn't been, like, it's weird. Like, everyone else is there but her. So it's like glaringly obvious that she's not there.
Like, I assume Ashley was...
Shower,
yeah.
I assume it's a contractual thing that they only have her for a certain number of episodes. The weird thing about that is I would have thought they would sign all the Pussycats for the same number of episodes.
Right.
Well, I assumed that she was either promoting or doing her Deirdre and Lainey movie.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I don't think she would have been doing the Deirdre and Lainey movie because it debuted at Sundance or whatever it was.
But I think that debuted, you know what, it debuted around the time episode, like, 10 would have been filming.
Three, I think?
No, remember, it debuted, like, 2 or 3 weeks before we had seen Ashley when they were filming 13.
So. I honestly thought that it had debuted 2 or 3 weeks before we saw Ashley in November.
No.
I have the worst memory, so
that's okay.
I'm gonna defer to you on this. But yeah, that's very much a possibility then. I had been thinking it was Deirdre and Lainey, and then my own recollection of events got in the way and I decided that was probably unlikely.
But then you have somebody like Casey Cott, who is not a series regular, but he's been in every single episode.
Yeah, but most episodes, he doesn't have a speaking role. Like, I feel like he's in every episode, but he's basically an extra in a lot of them.
Yeah.
Or he just shows up to say something awkward and inappropriate and then moves on.
You know, it's funny. A lot of his jokes don't fly for me, but his reaction shots are the best.
Yes.
Like, he's the guy who just, every time he does some... It's funny, because I really, in the pilot... I remember talking to KJ back in November and praising his nonverbal acting. Like, because there was a lot of stuff in the pilot where he didn't have another person on camera with him. He didn't have anything to bounce off of. And he was just having to, like, emote. And he did a really good job of it. He hasn't really done it again since. It's been, that was a thing he did in the pilot. And then ever since then, he's been surrounded by people. But that's Casey Cott's wheelhouse is... doing a lot of, like, reaction shots and kind of almost physical comedy.
Well, hopefully they'll make Mysterious regular for season 2. Hmm. Also more Reggie, please.
Please. I think too, Kevin has, like, a voice of the audience kind of role where, like, he'll say things that, like, you're thinking, like, in the episode when he's like, this is riveting, you know, like, when they're having the whole thing. That's what the audience is thinking. So he's kind of there to have, like, those reactions. For you.
Although tonight it was Veronica who said the thing that the audience was thinking to Cheryl. I know I'm jumping ahead.
Twincest.
This was the weird, this was like the most meta episode of the season. One of the things that I can't remember if you said it on or off camera, Michelle, but you know, this was the one, it felt like a teen movie more than anything else that they've done this season.
Yeah.
And also like they had the Dark Betty reference, which I tweeted at the time. I really thought that was a construct of the fans. I didn't realize that Dark Betty was like a thing people said. But maybe because that was the Dark Betty episode was the episode when we were up there while they were filming the finale. So maybe I thought it was fans because it was the cast live tweeting and screwing around on that, you know. But so they made the Dark Betty reference and I'm like, huh, they said Dark Betty on camera. And then like 5 minutes later, there was the Twincest reference. I was like, huh, they said Twincest on camera.
It's the orange elephant in the room. You know, it had to come up eventually.
It was great. I love that it was Veronica too. I was like, oh my God, Veronica.
Yeah. If there's anybody who can take down Cheryl though, it is always going to be Veronica.
Speaking of takedowns, I was kind of disappointed that we didn't get to see FP just utterly demolish Chuck Clayton.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess, because he's an adult and so that's it like you'd spend the last three episodes with FP in jail.
Which would not fly with for me.
Yeah, we do not need to see FP in jail anytime soon.
Ever.
That'd be bad. But although this is also jumping ahead, but I love that scene right after the whole fight and everybody leaves where FP has a little dialogue with Alice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that whole thing about, you know, it's kind of like teasing her past that she might be from the South Side.
Yeah, it's interesting because there were a lot of people on Twitter asking whether he had implied she had actually been a serpent. I don't think that she's a serpent in the sense of being a part of the gang. Peeling back the curtain ever so slightly, because I know that we're still kind of in sensitive territory there. When we were on set, I got the impression that the serpents were not only the gang, but also like the school mascot in Southside. Like, there was a lot of serpents everything whenever the Southside stuff was coming up in conversation.
Well, I don't have the transcript of the interview the other day, but somebody flat out asked Roberto if she was a serpent. And I think the answer was ambiguous. I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I think they haven't decided completely yet. But I'm sure that will be explored in season two, unless Alice is the killer.
I was going to say, I kind of got the impression from that scene that more than anything else, they were setting up the possibility of those two in season two. Like, of those two having a dynamic. Which would be kind of a neat... there would be something really appealing about that relationship being developed, whether it's romantically, because I do know that a lot of people are like, oh yeah, chemistry. Or whether it's romantically or not, I think that having somebody who's so prim and proper and somebody who is essentially the town drunk share the screen and have it not be like one of the things that was really remarkable to me is that as much as she tried to be condescending to him, he just wasn't having it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, like, that makes their dynamic more fun because it's not what you expect. Like, you see Alice with a character like FP and the expectation is like that she's going to basically talk down to him and he's going to slink away. And so having them be more or less on equal footing made that a really interesting kind of bit of business.
I also loved that, like, her snooping, where apparently she can see inside a dark room. Like, she saw that FP was hanging out with Joaquin.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, there are serpents over there. Interesting. But wouldn't FP be expected to be hanging out with serpents? When you think about it.
Yeah, although I think... I could see why she was surprised or taken aback by that. Because I think the expectation was that he was there because it was Jughead's birthday. And that, you know, he's his dad, and this is not a serpent thing, that it's a Jughead thing. Yeah. And so having a serpent there and in play, I'm a fan of how quickly she put those dots together. That wait a minute. No, it's not realistic that it's a coincidence that the sheriff's kid is sleeping with a serpent.
Yeah. At least somebody put it together. Because you think as smart as all these kids are, they might be like, hey, this is a little weird.
Well, I mean, maybe they don't... I didn't make that connection immediately either. If you remember in the podcast, you guys both brought that up. And I was like, maybe? I don't know. My thing was that Kevin is a generally appealing young man, and that there was no real reason to believe that somebody wouldn't just be attracted to him.
And they're teenagers. I mean, they're not like trying to find something sinister in someone's relationship, unless you're Betty and Jughead. But my like main unbelievable part about the entire episode was that Alice is across the street looking out her window and doesn't A, march over and break up the party, or B, call the cops. Like, she already has like this hate on for Archie, and it's like weird to me that she doesn't like fly over there and drag Betty out of the house.
Yeah, it was a weird that was, I mean, and again, I kind of tweeted about this, that this whole episode gave me like anxiety, because I'm the kind of person who like, I would not tolerate any of that crap. Like, if you know, me personally as a person, you know, Jughead blamed Betty for all this, and there was that whole scene where he was just awful, and he was basically like, "You threw a party, so screw you, because you knew I didn't want this." And I'm like, I kind of get where he's coming from, but at the same time, like, her idea of a party was like six people watching movies in the living room.
Yeah, right.
Archie was the one who like saw a keg and couldn't bring himself to say, "Get the hell out of here, or I'm going to call the cops," and just kind of got a mischievous grin on his face and said, "Yeah, bring him in." So to me, I'm kind of like, you know, Archie and Cheryl kind of share this blame. There's very little of it left over for Betty, because to me, it was a party. Betty was doing it pretty right.
Right. But, and it's also like Archie literally goes from like watching Jughead yell at Betty over the party to the front door and inviting all those people in. So he knows moments before that Jughead is not interested in this at all. And then again, just Archie being the worst. So,
yeah, that was, and again, we've seen Archie kind of evolving the last several weeks, and we've seen a lot of growth and a lot of kind of self-sacrificing behavior, especially as his dad. So to see him like just backslide that hard was just jarring.
Well, also he was inebriated.
That's true. He was. But the other thing too, by the way, is this is probably a good episode to talk about Archie's psychology a little bit. Is anybody else a little bugged by the fact that like clearly he clearly has like a legit problem, right? He can't be alone for like a minute.
Well, he's like a serial dater. We all know those people.
It's one of those things that just makes it, it amuses me, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, dear God.
At least he didn't try to sleep with Veronica.
Yeah, no, you gotta, I give him points for that.
She's a little young for him.
It's true. I give him points for that. I also give him credit for the fact that, I also give the writers credit, excuse me, for the fact that the reason that he's like a serial monogamist and he's hopping from relationship to relationship is that they've done a good enough job of building up most of these characters to be people that you care about. And so it's really hard to have a one night stand with Val or with Veronica, because the audience is invested in that person. You know, one of the nice things in this show is that Archie can't have a girl who's just a prop, because most of the girls on the show are more interesting than he is.
But does Jughead think that Archie slept with Veronica?
I don't know. I would assume he probably thinks so, because all he knows is that she spent the night and came down the stairs.
Yeah. And did they get the house cleaned before Molly Ringwald showed up?
It really didn't look like it.
Okay.
Because I feel like they just kind of showed up while Archie and Jughead were having breakfast. And I know that when Jughead was pouring out his breakfast, you could still see like streamers hanging and stuff like that.
Okay.
I mean, since Juggy didn't sleep, it's a pretty good odds that he picked up at least some of the more egregious stuff. But I find it unlikely that in the 4 hours between when that madness ended and when they would have woken up in the morning, that Jughead managed to single-handedly clean it all up.
Also, I mean, it would have made him kind of a dick, but shouldn't FP have called up Fred and been like, "Hey, your kid's having this party"?
I don't know. I kind of feel like FP is, I mean, the fact that he was the only adult in the room and he didn't break it up until people came to blows, I think that pretty much tells you everything you need to know about the limits that he's willing to put on things.
Okay. So, what did you guys think of seeing Chuck again?
I hope that that subplot is over. I don't think that it is. It's one of those things. It's sometimes I have these characters or these subplots in these shows that I just, even if they're well done, I just don't like them. Like, they're just more anxiety inducing than they are fun to watch. And the whole subplot with Chuck and the football players is kind of that. Like, I liked the idea of three of them kind of getting their just desserts. And then as soon as Jughead narrated that, like, things were going to get much worse from there, I was just like, oh, Jesus, is this, you know?
Fair.
So I kind of wish that this would be the last we saw of Chuck for a while. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, unless they plan on like developing him as a character, I don't need to see him again. Like, I don't want him to just come in like every once in a while just to stir up trouble. You know, like the thing that's great about Cheryl and her being evil is that there's something behind it and you sort of understand it.
Yeah.
Whereas when you have like somebody like Chuck who just like shows up to be a jerk for seemingly no reason, you know, you kind of just are like, I don't care about this. Like, just, you know, fade off into the distance, please.
Well, Chuck is a jerk because Nancy's not around to hang out with him. You know? Got your little comic book references.
Well, I was distracted by Betty and Juggy. They made a pretty good point. They said that, or I don't know if Betty and Juggy is a he or a she, so I constantly say they because that's their display name. But Betty and Juggy noted that Alice is probably involved with someone on the Serpents that that she had left when she married Hal, and
Ooh.
that could once again be a pretty interesting kind of bit of business if they were going to explore that next year. The fact that, okay, yeah, like not only was she from the South Side, but also that, you know, very much like the unresolved energy between Fred and Hermione, there's unresolved energy on the other side of town with Alice.
Maybe that's why she had her abortion.
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah.
Although I still think the kid would
Very
have been
soapy, but yes.
awesome. And that's
Well, I
why
mean,
you're repeating.
yeah. Well, I mean, that's Twin Peaks is like super, super soapy. And it's funny because like so much there are a lot of things that are very similar between these two shows. But one of the things that's interesting is that Riverdale at its core, in spite of the fact that it's kids who are by their nature more melodramatic, the show itself is less melodramatic. And so it's fun to kind of compare and contrast them, especially because Machen being in both lends it another level.
I just started watching Twin Peaks.
Nice.
So it's funny, like when he, you know, makes the reference to her being like a South, you know, from the South Side, it was like I had this flash of her in Twin Peaks in her waitress uniform. I'm like, oh, that's so like meta.
Yeah, right.
Okay, now I want an episode of Riverdale with the Twin Peaks score by Angelo Badalamenti, or however you say his name, and
We've
then have
talked
Cole
about that
Sprouse,
before.
we'll have Cole Sprouse narrate Twin Peaks.
That, you know, I feel like that'd be the kind of thing where we could bring him like a three-minute clip of Twin Peaks at San Diego Comic-Con and be like, okay, in lieu of doing our stand-up interview, I'm gonna have you narrate Twin Peaks and this video will go
No, see, I want him to narrate to Riverdale and back again.
viral.
I'm still on the side of that.
I never want to watch To Riverdale and Back again.
I don't want to
Yeah.
have to watch it to listen to Cole, so no.
Okay,
But
fine. Let's just leave it at Cole should narrate everything.
that's
Cole
fair.
can be like, "My name is Oliver Queen." Oh, wait, no.
Fair. No.
I would pay good hard cash to see Co to hear Cole deliver the Legends introduction as done by Heatwave in that one episode.
Or ha have him do Supergirl and
Oh God. Oh God.
became my cousin, Superman. Oh, we're going on a tangent now, but yeah, him or just have Jughead introduce Legends of Tomorrow for no reason at all, just as
I would support that. It's kind of like I think you said it on the show. I know we talked about the idea that if the CW could swing it, one of the most fun things to do would be to do just an entire like a network-wide teaser where it's just everybody walking in and Cheryl berating them.
until
That'd be
Cat
really
Grant
funny.
shows up and Cat is just like, no.
Yeah. exactly. I would be supportive of, in the same way that that would be fun, I would be supportive of a whole week where we just, for no reason whatsoever, had Jughead do the introductions on all the CW shows. I would love to hear Cole as Jughead trying to do the accent for the telenovela on Jane the Virgin.
I liked the idea. I forget which one of you said it during one of the podcasts, where like if like the Flash is like jumping Earths, and then all of a sudden they're just in the middle of Riverdale High, and everyone's like, "What the?" Just like I a said split second.
I said that in the show for episode 5, and I can only tell you that definitively because it came up on my shuffle today while I was on a walk, and so I actually listened to about 15 minutes of that episode today, and I remember. I almost cut out that whole tangent about the DC crossover, like jokes that we were making. But yeah. Chris, who is so like anti, like he's like, no, I never ever want to see those shows crossover. When I made the joke like that Vibe could like vibe through and accidentally kill Jason Blossom, Chris's response was, oh my God, that would be terrible and awesome. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to leave this whole tangent in just for that response.
Jason Blossom is Savitar.
Oh, God.
The spoiler is out. Spoiler. We know now. Jason didn't die. He went to the future, became Savitar. And now Team Flash needs to beat him.
As a zombie.
As a zombie wearing a Nightwing costume.
Oh, wow.
Well, why not? I was going to say a Confederate uniform, but whatever.
That... Sure. Although I still think like that day that we were in Vancouver this last time, mm-hmm. when you look at the photos of Trevor, he looks like he's wearing a Red Hood outfit. Yeah. Like just like the pattern on his shirt, it looked very Red Hood. And Jason Todd originally had red hair.
That's true. Does Trevor have red hair? This is a tangent, by the way. This is little behind the scenes goodness is that and Michelle, no, you know this because you listened to us live last week, and then you probably listened to the podcast at some point. You know that like tangents like these ultimately don't make it into the show because as much fun as they are for us, I feel like most people are like, "What are they talking
about? Oh my God, what are you talking about?"
There are people listening right now who will wonder why it's cut out, so we should keep it this time. It's on topic. Because
what I'll do is I'll just leave in this part where we talk about cutting stuff, and then they'll just wonder, like, what in the world are they cutting? Why are they talking about this?
What was the part where we told Michelle about how Sheriff Keller is the one that killed Jason? No, but my final thought on this subject, and then we can move on, is I think it was you, Russ, who said that Trevor does have experience playing dead guys named Jason.
That's true.
So, Jason Todd,
Are we ever going to get to hear Jason speak?
I think that we should have like a scene in the finale that's just nothing but Jason Blossom and Melody from the Pussycats.
It's so weird every time you see a flashback of Jason.
Listening.
There you go.
It's so weird every time you see a flashback of him. It's like creepy that he doesn't talk. He's just like staring, and it just makes it even more weird. I mean, I guess it's supposed to, but
because we get to build our own assumption of what Jason is.
Right.
Based on the way that Cheryl describes him. And if we, I don't think we need to actually hear him until his book is closed. Until we're going to, you know,
until
like
his death scene.
Yeah, like we'll probably see his death, you know, him screaming for his life as Alice Cooper is torturing him.
You know, Sheriff Killer.
While Sheriff Killer watches and
shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
See, I feel like what we should do is just have an alternate cut of the finale that's just like Clue. You ever seen, you know, the Clue movie?
Yes, I love that movie.
Where just you get 5 different endings with 5 different people killing. I mean, we know that they did change something about the ending because we were told several times when we were in Vancouver that they had to like reshoot bits, and there were things that we were told were going to be or were originally planned for the finale that didn't happen. I think we've talked about all that before now at this point. Originally, Ashley has said they were going to sing the Josie and the Pussycats theme, and that didn't happen this season. Aww. And then Cammy told us that her dad was going to show up, but then he didn't. And then apparently somebody at WonderCon told Chris that Hiram was probably going to show up anyway, so I'm not sure.
I'm kind of leaning now towards it being Hiram at the end of the season rather than Sabrina, as many of us had thought.
It wouldn't surprise me if we get both.
Blame Zombie Jason.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we got both. Like, honestly, I don't think that Hiram would bring the same bang for in terms of interest that Sabrina would.
Right.
Unless, like, Hiram was some piece of just insane stunt casting or something. You know,
who could they get for Hiram?
God, I can't even think of who I would get for Hiram that would be... Because, I mean, one of the things is, if you're going to, like, in a hypothetical world where Hiram is the big reveal at the end of the finale and not Sabrina, and so you want that to be, like, a big holy shit moment.
I've got it. Hiram is Rogelio from Jane the Virgin. It all comes together.
Well, here's the thing, though. My point is that you would need... I feel like you would need somebody who is more famous than Luke. Like, you would need somebody bigger than Luke Perry to really have it be a holy shit moment. Because we're only going to see... Like, if we see him, I feel like we're only going to see him for, like, a minute.
Emilio Estevez.
There you go. Although he doesn't really act much anymore. On Psych, they had this thing where they had all... every member of the Breakfast Club was at one point or another on Psych, except for Emilio Estevez, because they couldn't get him.
Well, Marisol said she wanted Antonio Banderas.
That would be awesome.
That would. I don't know if we could get him on, like, network, or if he did, it would probably be for, like, a 3-episode arc and that's it. Although, honestly, I don't know, unless they made him the big bad of next season, I don't know that we need Hiram Lodge for more than a 3-episode arc.
No.
No.
Well, you know, if you're going to get bigger than Luke Perry, I mean, what's Jason Priestley doing right now? I know he's the wrong ethnicity and everything, but hey.
Well, that's the thing, though. I think that because... No, they do... Nope, I'm wrong. That was actually Cammy, not Veronica. I was thinking that somebody had said that both of her parents were actually Brazilian, but nope, there was a Cosmopolitan interview with Lily and Cammy today, where Cammy was talking about her family. And so that was not Veronica. That was actually Camila. But yeah, I kind of feel like because we've seen her mother, that her dad could be anybody. Very much like, you know, we had this conversation where they put themselves in a box where by casting Luke Perry, the mother of Archie had to be redhead. And I mean, that worked out fine.
So was Molly Ringwald in that Psych episode?
She was in a Psych episode. I'm 95% sure. I'd have to go back and look, cause it's been a while since I rewatched that show. Something I should do soon. But the, I'm pretty sure that she played like an office worker or something, like, or a nurse, in an episode. I can like picture her, but when I interviewed Rode for Dual Spires, the Twin Peaks themed episode, I asked him, cause at that point, you know, they had all these Twin Peaks actors, and I was like, what about Billy Zane? Like, you haven't brought Billy Zane on. And, we got into this whole tangent about people they wanted to have on Psych. And I was
Billy
like,
Zane could be.
There you go. Billy Zane could be Hiram. I would buy that. But yeah, Rode had said something along the lines of, because I asked him about the Breakfast Club thing, because I think at that point they'd had like 3 of them. And he said something along the lines of, yeah, I'm pretty sure that we got Molly for next season and we just got to sew up a contract. But I think the one that's going to get away from us is Emilio, because he just doesn't act very much anymore. And then as far as I recall, that turned out to be accurate. I know that Emilio was never in it. I'm pretty sure that Molly Ringwald was. And then I can literally in my head, I can rattle off who Anthony Michael Hall and Judd Nelson and Ally Sheedy were. Ally Sheedy was a major recurring character for like 3 seasons on Psych.
Let's just, you know, put on the table, Ian Ziering is not going to play Hiram Lodge.
No. We could just go down the list of all the people who are constantly rumored for every single role on the CW and just be like, no, it's not going to be this guy. It's not going to be.
I still think that they need to get Billy Zabka as the gym coach, though, at one point. Coach Cleats or something like that.
I feel like now that you've made Chuck Clayton just totally unsalvageable as a character, I kind of feel like Coach Clayton has to go away at some point. Like, unless they plan on really using Chuck as like a recurring villain. And like we said earlier, I don't know that you can do that without really alienating people, because he's just so totally unlikable.
Well, here's the question, though, kind of going back to something I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they would have used Chuck in this kind of role so heavily if they had had access to Reggie all the time?
No.
Would Reggie have been...
It's hard to say, though, because it's kind of the conversation that we've had a couple times about Reggie being the murderer.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
and he's
okay,
on the murder board.
Yeah, but hear me out. Like, on the one hand, yes, he's the bully, and he's the jerk, and he's the guy who... But, like, the Dark Bitty episode, that was kind of a whole other ballgame. Like, that stuff was really despicable, and I feel like the characters involved with that are borderline not recoverable. Yeah. And so I almost feel like they wouldn't have had Reggie involved with that, because Reggie, yeah, even as the bully and the bad guy, like, he's still a major, major part of the Archie Comics mythology, and right, he's a guy who you don't want to burn.
But then again, we do live in a world where Dick Cassablancas became a likable character on Veronica Mars.
That's true, but part of that was that he had to go through, like, the journey of his brother being the actual murderer in one of the seasons.
So maybe Coach Cleats did it. Or not Coach, Coach Clayton did it.
Yeah, Reggie also in the comics, I think, I mean, he's kind of friends with them, too. Like, even though he's a jerk, like, there are moments where he's friends with them. Whereas, like, yeah, I can't see any of these people ever giving Chuck the time of day ever again. So,
no.
I agree. I don't think they would have used Reggie for, like, the maple syrup thing and or whatever that was, the sticky maple.
Yeah, sticky maple. it's such a weird thing, because I think you're right. I think that Chuck would have been used more and differently if not for 13 Reasons Why. But I also think the fact that he's just such a bad, like, such a bastard. I really don't feel like any character who you want around if the show lasts 7 seasons does the kind of stuff that we've seen Chuck do in his first 2 appearances.
Right.
But, all right. One thing that I did want to make sure that we touched on was, and we kind of brushed past Hiram a little bit, but this thing with Hiram this time, It's really interesting to me, because he basically said, if you don't help me get out of jail, I'm going to burn your mother. And do we think that she's actually complicit in things, or do we think that Hiram is kind of a magnificent bastard kind of villain, and that he's just got firewalls upon firewalls, and he can find a way to implicate her even though she's not doing anything?
Probably that he would find a way to implicate her. He's just trying to manipulate. But, I mean, it is possible Hiram is just desperate. Maybe Hiram isn't involved in any of this, but the Blossoms know that if he came forward, it would look like he's the one that killed Jason.
And that's another interesting element of this, is that if we have now seen this thing where his lawyer basically says, we're not coming forward to the courts with this information about Clifford Blossom, because we worry that we're going to look guilty in the murder. So how does that change the dynamic of Clifford and Hiram and everything else once the murderer is caught? Let's assume for the sake of argument that it's not Hiram and that it's not Clifford, even though I'm pretty sure it's Clifford.
I agree.
But let's assume for the sake of argument that it's not one of those guys, and that we're going to get to see their little war play out again next year. How much different is that once the killer's caught and Hiram is able to kind of open up the cannons against the Blossoms?
Well, for one thing, Keller won't be able to protect Clifford anymore, because Keller will be in jail. I love getting away with it. Poland or whatever. No, I'm just kidding.
I think the thing about the Blossoms is that, like, in the next couple episodes, that everything about them is just going to explode, and I'm sure, Craig, having seen the next one, you could maybe agree. that we'll find out a lot more about them. And I think that they have, it seems like they kind of run the town essentially, you know, and so they've kept a lot of their skeletons hidden. You know, like Sheriff Keller seems to be very much kind of on their side, and the mayor like doesn't want them to know that she let Hiram buy the drive-in. And so like everyone kind of, you know, stays away from them. But I think as they let that open up more, and maybe as like Alice tries to expose them, that'll just kind of blow up in their face.
I've forgotten at this point, do the Blossoms know about the drive-in? Because now Cheryl knows as of this week.
What about the drive-in?
That,
oh,
that serpents devalued, because that was like a major plot point in the first chunk of the season, is that the Blossoms can't find out because they're going to burn the mayor.
Right.
And so now,
I'm pretty sure it doesn't come up next week, at least.
I was mostly thinking, I can't remember, is this the first time that one of the Blossoms, and in this case it's Cheryl, but is this the first time that one of them has found out? They didn't find out like last week when we were learning all those secrets about them and the fact that they were the ones that implicated Lodge, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I don't think
Unless
so.
They already knew anyway and we just didn't know that.
It seems like they made such a big deal of it that they wouldn't have learned, and that it wouldn't have been addressed on some level on camera.
Off screen, yeah.
Yeah, that was a thing. Chris at one point thought that they just knew, because I don't remember, something happened in 6 having to do with the whole dinner with Fred, and
Roberto said the other day that they have so much like extra footage from episodes, it could have been something they've even shot that just never made it into an episode.
That is true, but anyway, it strikes me that that is a potential thing that's coming up on the horizon, because now, at a bare minimum, even if they did know before and it got cut, now there's no way around it. One, like Cheryl knows, which means that sooner or later the Blossoms are going to find out.
Right.
Yeah. And we didn't really talk about Jughead's reaction to finding out about Dark Betty. How do you think that's going to pan out?
Honestly, I think he was surprised, but his reaction wasn't to be repulsed. It was surprised. And my gut instinct, especially because they played so much with the idea of Jughead kind of fancying himself as the lone wolf, my gut instinct is that this actually strengthens them, at least in the short term, because he feels like, oh, okay, she's like me now.
Yeah. I agree.
And do you think she was being kind of like Alice in a way, and, you know, trying to make things right really for her rather than for him?
I think there's a lot of that that goes on in the show. I think it's human nature. I think that there's a lot of that that goes on in the world. I think that, yeah, there's definitely an element of... Sorry, got a message.
I don't know what that means either.
Okay, we just got a message from another television journalist with just the name of an actor in it. Oh, that's who she thinks should be Hiram.
Oh, so Carla's listening to us right now.
Apparently, yeah. Hi, Carla. Hi, Carla. Carla Day has suggested that John Slattery should be Hiram Lodge, who is he's mad.
She just said yes, so that's what this is all about.
Either that, or she's just confirming that she was watching. But
yeah, Dermot.
Carla has
Dermot Mulroney.
Oh yeah, Dermot Mulroney. So she's still 20 minutes ago when we were talking about casting that character, and she's got way better ideas than we do. What about
Dermot Mulroney's like twin brother, Dylan McDermott?
And then you could have Dylan McKay and Dylan McDermott in the same show.
It was weird enough when Luke Perry, or when Fred mentioned Bob Dylan, and he just said Dylan, and I'm like, yeah.
That was great.
Nope. Oh, Carla says no. We need to have Carla on the show, don't we?
We've invited her on the show before. It just never worked out timing-wise.
Although she'll probably make fun of me a lot if she's on. She tends to do that. She's like, as far as doing what we do, she's like my sister in a way. My younger, better-looking sister, of course.
Well, I am the weird cousin of everybody because being in upstate New York, nobody's near me, and so I don't have like anybody I go out for beers with.
Yeah, you live in the middle of nowhere in New York.
I do. And by the way, for the handful of people who have actually seen, like, who have watched one of these live streams before, who have watched like the Emerald City video ones that I sometimes do, this is the last time you're going to see this wonderful, wonderful backdrop that I'm often in. Because it's a peek behind the curtain. This is actually my sister-in-law's room. She's been in Australia for like a year now. And so this has been a convenient place to record because nobody's ever in here. But she's coming back on Monday, which means this is officially the last opportunity I will possibly have to record anything in this room.
Will she bring back some more Marmite for KJ?
That, you know, I should ask her because she hasn't left yet.
I saw KJ after the screening the other day, and he was eating something. It was some vegetable something, and I was like, "Hey, so is that Marmite?" he had a good attitude about it. He's got a good sense of humor.
I did tell her that she had to steal one of the Laura Palmer missing posters that were being posted up all over Sydney, which is where she lives.
Oh wow.
But anyway,
how many people are listening to us live right now?
Somebody dropped off when I started talking about Laura Palmer. So right now it's just three.
So it's Carla, Betty and Juggy, and Andy?
Probably, although Betty and Juggy said that they weren't going to be able to watch us. And then later, 10 minutes later said that they were watching us and had feedback. So,
there's two, Carla says.
Well, in real, according to the back end thing, it says three. Although God knows when it updates. I honestly don't pay much attention to who's watching, except for when somebody asks me who's watching.
You know, what's really unfortunate is Michelle Mimi has not tweeted at us at all during this entire hour.
That's true.
I wonder what she's doing tonight?
Carla doesn't want me to spoil Twin Peaks.
We will not mention that Sheriff Keller killed Laura Palmer.
Well, my thing is that ordinarily I would do it out of spite because I'm a jerk, but Mimi just said that she started Twin Peaks just now too. And so I forget, Michelle, based on our first episode, because I know that we spoiled it in some way, shape, form, or fashion, but based on our first episode, do you go into the show already knowing who killed Laura?
Oh no, I don't even remember you guys talking about that.
All right, excellent. We were just talking about an actor in our first episode, and Craig offhandedly said, "Oh yeah, and that person killed Laura."
I remember you saying that, like, we don't find out who killed her till the second season, right?
Yeah.
Which, while I'm watching it, I'm like, "Wow, God, that's such a horrible idea, and whose idea was that?" But yeah.
Well, they didn't want to reveal it at all.
Yeah, the idea was that would be just the catalyzing event for everything that came after it, and that really the murder mystery was not as important as the characters of the town. And so it was never meant to be
a thing
solved per se. But the network basically said, "No, you started your show with a murder mystery. You have to solve it at some point." And they forced them to solve it, and the resolution was all right, but a little bit lackluster. And by that point, it would have been like 20 episodes or something, and people were already pissed. And it was such a weird thing. It went from being like the biggest phenomenon on television to canceled in two seasons. And it's just
sounds like Heroes.
Yeah, actually, except Heroes limped along for like 5 years.
Four. We don't count the fifth one. Heroes are boring. Didn't happen.
It did too. I have a Rob Liefeld cover to prove it.
Moving on, back on topic. How disappointed would you be if Riverdale did not reveal who killed Jason?
Well, in theory, I would be very disappointed. In reality, we know that that's not going to happen because they've told us like 3 million times that that's not going to happen.
Fair.
They've based the entire show around it, so that would be kind of disappointing.
I think that it had they done that, it would have been a really bold move to make, a really stupid one in a lot of ways, but a really bold one, because one of the things that I remember having these conversations about Twin Peaks is that, okay, so Twin Peaks didn't resolve the murder in the first season. Everybody got really upset. And to a certain extent, people said, oh, well, you know, that's TV was like that back then. People needed instant gratification. They didn't understand long-form storytelling. If you made it today, it would be different. But then the killing came along, and they did the same damn thing. And they got punished the same damn way by the audience. And so clearly, nothing much has changed in the intervening 20-odd years. So I think if Riverdale became the third show to do that, or the first, I'm sure other shows have done it, but if it became the third high-profile show to do that, then it would have been a really bold move, but a really goddamn stupid one. And it would have been the kind of thing where it's like, okay, if you can pull it off, then, like, congratulations you.
Yeah. I will never forget, in the late 90s, I was working at the newspaper, mm-hmm. and South Park was going to reveal who Cartman's father was. Mm-hmm. And instead, they ran an April Fool's episode with Terrence and Phillip, like, haha, we're not going to reveal it tonight.
Oh, yeah,
and I remember. So many people complained. They had to rush the episode onto the air to reveal who Cartman's father was. It was weird.
I know so little about South Park, I couldn't even begin to tell you.
The movie is actually really funny.
No, the movie is a masterpiece. I love that. I own it. But I've seen maybe a total of like 5 episodes, and the only reason I saw the movie was because the trailer was so good. I was just like, okay, yeah, I'll give them this one. But yeah, I remember that as a thing. I didn't remember that they rushed it onto the air. I just remember people being angry. But you know, it's the internet. Yeah. People are angry pretty much all the time.
Okay, going back to the Lost Weekend.
Yes.
This episode. Are there things that we had forgotten? I know there was this like passing reference to the wig wearing Clifford Blossom.
Yeah.
Where do you think and that's in the trailer too. We see his, you called it a Lex Luthor room of wigs.
Yeah.
So weird.
Which what to me, is that all about?
I don't know what that's about,
maybe,
but I
Clifford's
do
Clifford's not a redhead.
That's an interesting,
not really a Blossom.
The other thing that struck me about that is that recently on Twitter, I can't remember if it was in my timeline or if it was just a thing I stumbled across, a couple of fans were talking about how they had recast Clifford Blossom between the pilot and the first new episode.
They did?
No, they didn't.
Oh. But
he started wearing a terrible hairpiece. And
very CW.
And it just became one of those things where... at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. His hair did dramatically change, and he does, you know. But it never even occurred to me for a moment that, like, that could be a story point. I just figured it was like, they decided they liked him better with that hair and whatever. So I kind of got to give him a point on this one, because it's like, wow, I didn't even think about the hair pieces between the pilot and episode 2. But once somebody pointed it out, I was like, oh, yeah, that was kind of jarring and strange. And now that we're going into episode 10 and it's actually a plot point, it's like, okay, you get that one. Golf clap.
What if Clifford isn't really a Blossom? He's a Cooper. And that's why Grandpappy Blossom killed Grandpappy Cooper.
That's definitely a possibility. And again, I'm so conflicted over that whole thing. I'm so conflicted over that whole story, whether that story is even credible. Because, like, nothing Hal said to Betty in the first 4 episodes turned out to be true. Hmm. And so the fact that you've had references back to it a couple times reinforces its reality. But at the same time, it would be the only true thing that he said to her, and it's abjectly ridiculous.
I just got a message from Carla saying Jason equals wig, not Blossom. He's actually Alice's son.
Which would
make it okay if Cheryl and Jason sleep together.
Well, here's my thing. I would buy that, except for the fact that I just kind of like we were talking about, I think last week, about the idea that I don't think they would kill Polly because it would just be meaner than this show feels. The problem with Jason being Alice's son, which would totally be like something I would buy, but like the fact that Polly's having the babies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no.
Then that would be other incest.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Like that early on I brought up the possibility that Archie was somebody else's kid and that was part of why Alice hated him so much. And then you guys rightly pointed out that his mom needed to be a redhead because Molly Ringwald. I wouldn't totally discount that theory, except for the fact that I feel like having her be pregnant kind of, I don't know. I don't know that this show is a show that's going to say, oh, and by the way, we're going to have the incest babies.
Yeah.
And again,
little,
I could
little
totally
two flowers in the attic.
Yeah.
Maybe she's not really pregnant.
The thing that Carla just said is that, yeah, but it's Riverdale. Maybe Polly's also not really Alice's.
Oh boy, they're really complicating.
We're really going down the rabbit hole with that one.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. I could see any number of crazy things coming up in the next little while because I've occasionally compared this show to Veronica Mars. And I remember like the last episode of Veronica Mars because they didn't reveal who the killer was until the last episode. And like on Riverdale, I feel like almost anybody could be the killer and we would understand a motivation. Mm. And you wouldn't have to have a whole episode just to explain it away. Because everybody in town is so interwoven in everybody else's lives. Whereas on Veronica Mars, it was like, once we found out who the killer was, we didn't really understand why it made sense until they spent a whole episode explaining it. And so that last episode was like just a never-ending torrent of chaos. And I kind of feel like even though we aren't going to get that to explain away the murderer, I feel like we are going to get like a finale for Riverdale that's just mayhem.
But would it be mayhem if it, say, turned out to be Clifford Blossom?
I think I think if it turned out to be either Clifford or Hiram, it could easily be mayhem because, like, if they were cornered, they have enough money and influence to basically tear down the town. And so you would have essentially a ticking clock element of we need to resolve the murder mystery and deal with all this other stuff before like the serpents come and torch the town or something crazy like that. But I mean, I don't think that it would be Bedlam in the same way in terms of like building a story around the killer. But I just think that there are so many dangling plot threads on this show right now. And I think that probably a good chunk of them won't be resolved this season and we'll have stuff left over for next year. But even if we resolve half of all the things that are still outstanding, then that's a whole lot to do in what now is 3 episodes.
Could a lot of these danglers be connected to each other, though?
Very possibly. And that would be the kind of thing where... But to me, that would still feel like Bedlam, even if it makes total sense and it's clean.
Right.
Because, like, in order to explain that they were connected to each other, you would have to spend like 5 minutes dredging up all of these points and finding the way that they interconnect.
And how Keller was there for all of it.
Dun dun dun.
He's the mastermind.
Yeah, I mean, this is a story about a town, about a podcast, about Sheriff Keller, after all.
That's true.
Killer.
Sheriff Keller.
Is Michelle the only person who has purchased any Sheriff Killer merchandise?
I think so, actually. I got two notifications and then a third notification that hers had shipped. And so I think the two notifications, one of them was just like, yeah, the first person actually bought something.
I'm so excited to get it and take a picture and send it to Chris.
And that's the right reason to do it.
Yeah, no, that's like the only reason I bought it.
And that's
and to support you, actually, of course. But
yeah, well, that's the thing. Actually, I think I'm gonna buy one for each of us. And it's this weird thing where I don't get a discount when I'm buying from my own store, but I do get a commission on every sale. So it's like, it's kind of like getting a discount because like I'll pay the $15 and then I'll get paid $2.50.
Well, Redbubble sends me like 15 emails a day with a 25% off coupon. So, nice. I mean, I'm sure they send you those though. Like, I'm always like, oh my God, Redbubble.
I haven't seen them yet, but that's because I've never bought anything off of Redbubble yet. I literally just like set up a store there. Somebody gave me a coffee mug for Christmas that was the Electric Blue Superman logo that somebody bootlegged onto a Redbubble store. And that was right around the time that I was looking for a home for some of the merch that we were doing for the podcast. And so, in spite of the fact that I haven't used the shop myself, I fell into that one as opposed to like Cafe Press or something. Because like some of the other places, it's super complicated the way that you actually get reimbursed. Cafe or Redbubble is really simple. Like they do it through PayPal.
Somebody needs to send Martin Cummins a Sheriff Killer, especially if he is.
Well, I what I want to do, I got to send it back to my buddy who designed the image and have him like up the resolution or something so that I can put it on a t-shirt. Because I want to send Cummins a t-shirt, not just like a coffee mug or something. I want it to be something big enough to.
Of course, they'd probably be like, "What's this? I don't get it."
I would have to like include a USB drive with like our podcast where we dubbed him Sheriff Killer and a note.
Well, I feel bad for one of the Riverdale writers, Brian Patterson.
Yeah.
Like today he tweeted, "Who do you think killed Jason?" And I just sent him hashtag Sheriff Killer. And it's gotta get on his nerves, but I'm sorry, Brian Patterson, if you're listening.
Well, Brian Patterson, I've said this before, yeah, I believe he's the only writer on the show who has directly interacted with the podcast before.
What did he say?
He had a comment on Facebook for our like second episode, and I can't remember what it was, but he was the one who told us that we needed to, so it wasn't our second episode, it was our third. He was the one who told us that we needed to use a podcast about a story about a town as our tagline.
I did not know that. This is...
Yeah, which actually it's funny because he had commented that after having seen the episode, but in the hotel room, we had all been like, that's really good. We should use that. And so,
yeah.
But yeah, no, he commented on one of our really early episodes. So I don't know if he has listened to us at all since then, but I've name dropped him a couple times because like he certainly like, and there's a large writing staff, obviously, for any TV show. There's like two or three writers on the show who are super active on social media. Brian and Britta London are the two who I like interact with the most and who I see talking about the show the most.
Are they the two that wrote tonight's episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. So they did a good job. I mean, all the cast was talking about this episode for weeks before it aired.
Yeah, it's funny because the only person, we asked everybody, what's your favorite episode? And the only person who didn't say 10 was Cole, in spite of the fact that it's a really Cole-heavy episode.
That's because Cole finds out in episode 13 that Jughead did it, and so he gets a lot of good material.
If you remember, he told us that his favorite was 7, because he likes playing off a ski.
So, and he liked being able to be naked in the shower.
There you
with
go.
With Archie.
Now you're just going to start. You're going to encourage people.
It's the porn parody.
Encouraging the shippers.
There you go. Carla said for Craig's benefit that apparently Brian Patterson also sat behind you guys at the WonderCon screening.
I know this. I tweeted at him and told him to say hi, but I think he'd already left by that point.
Ah, okay. But
or maybe he was ignoring me.
All right.
Yeah, our row at the WonderCon screening was probably the most energetic row. Like we were laughing at the right beats, we were snickering at the right beats, we were shocked, but also like the four kids or so to our right all were like super into the show too, so like
nice,
we had the best row.
Nice.
Pretty much is what it comes down to.
Okay, is there anything else, any other characters, as they say on the From Crisis to Crisis podcast, are all subplots accounted for at this point? Because I kind of feel like we are.
I think so.
We're done.
I will say it was nice to see like all of the C characters. Like we saw Dilton, we saw Ginger, we saw Tina, like we saw all of those people. Like even if it was just for a couple of seconds, like they were all kind of there.
Yeah,
Melody still doesn't have lines.
Poor
no,
Melody.
Although she got a really good, there was like a really good reaction gift this week of Melody, because when Chuck showed up in the cafeteria, if you looked at Asha was very put out by it, apparently.
Nice.
Which is actually, that's something she does really well. It's funny because people joke about, and I've joked about, the fact that Melody doesn't have any lines and doesn't get a lot to do relative to the other pussycats. But we have seen a couple of episodes where Asha, it's like, yeah, she's just hanging out in the background, but she's like making her character do as much as she can possibly do while hanging out in the background. Like, she's doing a good job of like interacting with the scene.
Indeed, I like her.
Oh, I have a question. So,
yeah.
Who's the fourth musketeer? Or was Betty... Oh, yeah. Okay, so I was trying to figure out if there was actually a fourth musketeer, or if Betty was, like, making an Archie, you're an idiot literary reference, that, like, technically D'Artagnan is the fourth musketeer. I was like, does she mean a fourth friend, or is she being like, Archie, they're not really three musketeers?
Like, the movie The Three Musketeers, wasn't there a fourth one?
Well, in the
that's the movie, is that they bring D'Artagnan in as the fourth musketeer. Yeah. Like, that's always the story.
I think that it's very likely that there was a fourth character who was thick as thieves with them before Veronica showed up. Because I feel like it could just
Little
be
Ambrose.
Huh?
Little Ambrose.
Yeah. I mean, it could be just a sly kind of reference. But at the same time, I feel like that's unlikely, because the way that it reads in the episode is that it's very much about them. And so I feel like they would have caught that in editing and been like, oh, you're going to like tease people with something that's never going to pay off. Mm. And that being the case, I kind of wonder who it is. Because we really haven't seen anybody in town who seems to have kind of a fractured relationship with them.
Well, that's because Little Ambrose moved out of town after the Little Archie comics were done.
I mean, you know what would be interesting is if the fourth Midge. Person... Huh?
Midge.
Well, it's very possible. I was going to say if the fourth person is whoever gets introduced in the finale and is going to play a big role in the next season.
Sabrina, who moved to Greenville? Kids,
really?
Yeah, Carla just suggested Sabrina, which is what I was kind of implying, because I still kind of feel like Sabrina is going to be the breakout of season two. But yeah, whether it's Midge, whether it's, you know, but I really got the impression from that they're talking about a fourth member of their squad, and that person hasn't yet been introduced. Like, there's nobody in the show who I can think of where they've had a weird energy where it might be like, oh, it's maybe Cheryl used to be super close with it. No, that's not going to be a thing.
Yeah.
So to me, it's kind of like, yeah, I feel like that's a character who's just begging to be introduced.
There's so many possibilities with this show. Like, I mean, we have all these theories, but also, you know, all these possibilities of characters to show up throughout the run of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you think about it, the show has gone 10 episodes so far without a bad episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, I mean, in as much as I wish that we had full seasons, quote unquote, of full seasons of iZombie, because I love that show. I do kind of feel like it shows benefit from having a shorter season and a more limited, you know, amount of crap that they have to cram into 1 year.
I agree.
And so
I'm a big fan of the smaller season, the like 13 to 16 episodes. I think 22 is just too many. You get a lot of filler.
Yeah. Well, and especially you would get a lot of filler with a show like Riverdale because of the mystery element. Like, you would have to kind of keep that alive the whole time. And it's the same way that you get, like, on the superhero shows, you get so much filler because it's like, oh, yeah, you have to periodically, like, bounce back and remind people that Savitar still exists.
Right.
Except for sometimes you get situations like season one of The Flash, where there was only really one or two bad episodes out of 23.
No, I mean, absolutely. It can be done that you can make, like, a near-perfect episode of, or a near-perfect season of television that's, you know, 20 or 22 or 30 episodes long. but it's a lot less likely.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can point at like the first season of Cheers and say that, you know, that episode, that season, which I think was 30 episodes, was like one of the greatest, you know, debut seasons in television history. But it doesn't, like, that doesn't mean that every show should do that, because the likelihood of you replicating the success of Cheers, as we've seen a lot of times, is slim. All right. Well, why don't we go around the?
Oh, you cut out.
Yeah, you're cutting out, Russ.
I was gonna say, why don't we go around the table and offer up our killer theories? And then Michelle started to talk, and I was wondering if she had something.
Yeah, you were cutting out. That's why she was. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So Michelle,
I probably leaned too far away from the mic.
What was the question?
Sorry. Do you want to start the killer theories?
Oh, sure. I'm going to stick with my Clifford Blossom killer theory.
Craig?
I'm kind of leaning more towards Clifford as well lately. I still think it could be Keller, but at the same time, I think that somebody related to Keller, not Kevin, might be the death in episode 13. In other words, Joaquin would be the one who dies then. So that's my guess on the second death. Who do you guys think will be the second death, by the way?
I'm still kind of leaning towards Hal Cooper, just because I feel like that's a story that is escalating very quickly and is kind of begging to be resolved.
Yeah. I also lean towards Hal because it works with my Clifford Blossom theory.
I mean, my killer theory is still Clifford Blossom. I will say that if we get somebody who's serpent affiliated who dies in the finale, then I could totally see that person also being the killer. Because I feel like, you know, if for instance it was Joaquin who dies, it might be that he's the trigger man, so to speak, and not the person who's morally responsible for the killing, but the did it.
Right. Yeah. And Russ, you and I have talked about this a little bit too. Like, I don't think it's just going to be like, oh, so-and-so killed Jason. It's a very like convoluted, like many parts put together of how we get there. Like, there's obviously a person who actually killed him, like did the deed, but there are several things at work.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me at all because of the kind of warring factions that we have with Hiram and Clifford. It wouldn't surprise me at all if one side of that conflict was responsible for, you know, say, kidnapping him and torturing him. And then the other side of the conflict was responsible for killing him because they feared that he either had or was going to give up whatever it was he was being tortured for.
Yeah. So who's your current theory for the killer, Russ?
Like I said, I'm still pretty firmly in the camp that I think it's Clifford, and I have been for like 3-4 weeks now, and nothing has really shaken me off of that. I do think that there's an outside chance that, because I'm very committed, and I have been basically since like week 4 or something, I'm very committed to this idea that it probably ties into the war that's going on between the Blossoms and the Lodges. And so it could very well be anybody in that kind of round table. But the nice thing about Clifford is, going back to your point from our first episode, it's always nice when the murderer is somebody who you actually see in the pilot.
Yeah.
I'm excited to go back and watch the show once we know who it is, and watch from the beginning and see like all the subtle hints that were given along the way.
Yeah, I think that's always fun. I think I talked about this a little bit on the podcast, but Craig and I knew way in advance who was going to be Prometheus on Arrow, which was like the big mystery that they stretched out for 15 episodes this year.
Yes, you were telling me this.
And so, like, because we knew, we were watching the episodes a little differently than most people were. And so, like, I was able to pick up on some, like, little, very subtle things. And so that, like, when some of the people on my Twitter timeline were saying, that's so random and arbitrary, I can't believe they went that way, I was like, no, if you go back and watch this episode and this episode, there were things that he said and things that he did that really kind of, like, you'll see differently when you rewatch. And I don't think that Arrow did as thorough a job of kind of putting together that little mystery as Riverdale likely will have with Jason's killer. And so my feeling is that if I'm pleased going back and rewatching Arrow, I'm probably going to be doubly pleased going back and kind of going through this mystery again. All right. I think that's all the gas that I have in the tank, unless anybody has any final thoughts that they want to get out there.
No, I think we should just tell everybody where we can be found. So do you want to start, Michelle?
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter at MimiC1019.
All right. Actually, why don't you go? Cause I can do an outro for us.
You can find me at ksitetv.com. My Riverdale stuff is on Twitter at Riverdale TV. So like all my K-Site TV articles about the show can be found there. You can also find me on Instagram at Waterworld Photos. Oh wait, that's Chris. I had to get the plug in for Chris. So find Chris on Instagram at Waterworld Photos, dedicated to the Universal Studios something or other.
Waterworld Stunt Show at Universal Studios. Hollywood,
yes. And yeah, so check that stuff out. I'm also on Instagram myself as Vader1206. If anyone wants to see my ugly mug or any of my pictures from Riverdale or anything like that. So there we go. And Russ.
Can I share something quick? Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Britta London was doing questions on Tumblr, so I asked her what was in FP's present. Mm-hmm. And she said that scene was cut because it reveals something that they're going to reveal in a later episode.
Interesting.
Yes. I just wanted to share.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I hadn't thought about that because, you know, it was just a birthday present, which is funny because usually I'm the guy who's like, oh, look at that stupid blue gym bag that nobody else cares about.
Well, of course, me being obsessed with FP, as you know, I was like, well, what is the present? I have to know. This is important to me.
Nice.
It kind of makes sense that that's something that they would play out through the last couple of set episodes, because when we went to the set visit in whenever our last one was, it all blurs, February, Cole talked a lot about how the back half of the season is very Jughead and FP heavy. But you can find me at comicbook.com. That's where I write stuff. That's where I'm gonna get off here. And I'm gonna finally finish the story that I started about 2 hours ago, and then if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Russ Burlingame, RussBurlingame. As I always like to say, that's really long, and I'm not gonna repeat it. So, ECV_podcast is the Emerald City Video Podcast, which is a show that I do with a bunch of people who used to work with me at a video store here in Syracuse. We talk about movies, not about Emerald City, the television show, in spite of what both Chris and Michelle have said in the past.
And that's it for tonight.
And that's it for tonight. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you very much, Michelle, for joining us on Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast. We are a podcast about a story, about a town, where Sheriff Keller killed a bunch of people.
Also, leave us feedback on iTunes. Comments.
Yes.
Compliments. Money. Especially money. No, I'm just kidding.
Bulldogs.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.